off the ball. This is News Talk.
Very nice to have that music back. Graeme Hunter, hello.
Joseph, that tune, I'm with you. Good evening.
Good evening. PSG, Real Madrid. We have Sporting Lisbon, Manchester City. For what it's worth, I'll mention Manchester United, Brighton as well at 8:15. So can we start at Parc des Princes? I'm sure you've been there, by the way. I've driven by once or twice here or there. What's it like?
Well, it's fantastic. I've seen several different sports played there. I've seen several different teams playing there. Probably the first time I was there working was for Celtic, Paris Saint-Germain, the Boulogne boys. In those days, there was a real hooligan problem. It's not actually gone away, but it's much, much better. I've been there for this tie in the past. And Real Madrid really are not only looking to just steady their season, but for revenge for the last time they were in Paris against PSG, when they were absolutely thumped 3-0, taken apart, really, by Thomas Tuchel's team, where we heard that before. This is a massive tie as well on lots of different levels. And the Parc des Princes is old. It's in a smart part of the city in terms of getting to it. But once you're in there, it reeks of old-style football, because the stadium is far from dilapidated, but it ain't all modern and squared off and round and lit up the way that Allianz Arena is, for example, and the Bernabeu is going to be soon, and in our country, Villarreal and Sevilla. But that's a contrast with the way that PSG are seen by everybody as the nouveau riche. So it's the nouveau riche playing in a real old-fashioned football stadium.
Yeah, plenty of concrete around it as you drive by. So it's very interesting you mentioned the nouveau riche aspect, because these are interesting times at PSG, where they're 13 points clear in Ligue 1. They had a disappointing late win against Rennes on Friday. Mbappe scored the winner. What was so striking about that game is that for the first 25 minutes, the main stand where the ultras go was completely empty, and then when the ultras decided to come back in, there was no chanting for the rest of the first half, and there were 20 banners across the stand which said things like overpaid mercenaries. It said things like the players choose their matches, we'll do the same, and Leonardo, as in the sporting director, time to go. And looking a bit further into it, they had written a letter in the build up to that game. And it seems like they, you know, this pinch point was always likely to happen, I suppose. The club wants to be a global brand, is what the ultras letter said. Obsessed with selling shirts to the point of forgetting its heritage, insulting the fans of Parc des Princes. They played in an away kit at home. This is a club that piles up the stars like a spoiled child without concern for a coherent sporting plan. This is a club that dreams so big it feels like the season starts in February while it despises domestic trophies. We no longer recognise our club, which seems to have lost its DNA. Very interesting, isn't it?
Well, it goes further, doesn't it? I mean, this is a club that's only 16 years old and the main threat from tonight, Karim Benzema. It's odd, isn't it, how none of your listeners are going to be surprised at this phrase, but football, we're weirdos, football fans. Let's just state it out loud. And football's really idiosyncratic because, you know, okay, I started paying attention from far before I first reported there in the early 90s. But at that time in the early 90s, there was no swathes of great money in there. They found it really hard to win the title. Okay, they'd been to a European final, but they were by no means the powerhouse in France, never mind Europe or the world. And the fans loved them. Okay, I don't want to laud fans who would go down and trash the country all the way down to Marseille and then all the way back up again, banning orders to stop Marseille fans coming to Parc des Princes, and also PSG's two sets of hooligans going down to Velodrome. But the passion, the exact polemic opposite to what you're talking about, the total and utter dedication to the club, well, that's diminished. Some people would say, is that a bad thing? There'd be different types of fans coming in now. But the hardcore ones, for some time now, have failed to recognise the club in the way that they like it to be. Now, sometimes in football, when a club evolves, you kind of just have to say, tough. We've seen, for example, in English football, that if you think about Wimbledon and MK Dons and New Wimbledon, lots of issues divide fans. The protests at Old Trafford and Sky Track by it, and now about the Glazers and back to the green and yellow. The types of things you just described about the Rennes match following a controversial and pretty floppy defeat. Okay, I think ultimately in penalties in the French Cup. The disassociation with, for example, the ownership, I think, has been long-term. The fact that it's a kind of Hollywood club now, the fans, the ultras you're talking about, never felt that, never felt in touch with that. Leonardo, too, is an oddity. And I think I side with the fans in that if you watch Leonardo's behaviour, the degree of interference that he's had in recent coaches, the way in which he, you know, fights really spite battles in the media if he doesn't get his way, I think there is an argument that if PSG truly wants to develop, then he's probably not talented or not. He's not the right man in the right place, I don't believe. Pochettino feels a disassociation with the club similar to the fans. I was lucky enough to interview him very early on this year. In fact, as Messi's signing was being completed, and he was pale and tousle-haired and spoke, even in those days, about worrying about all the big stars being truly committed, not just to the cause, but to the things that you're talking about. The fans are worried about level of intensity in training, the way they live off the pitch. It's a hard project. Whether you sitting at home listening to Off the Ball, believe in the money that's buying Paris Saint-Germain, believe in the way that they follow Chelsea and changing the trainers at the drop of a hat in constant search of the elusive holy grail of dominating Europe, whether you believe in that or not, the way that this project is set up, it is a really difficult one to, what's the best phrase, Joe, for one person, whether it be the owner, the sports director, the coach, to control. Mm. And I think that they've got a self-perpetuating problem that goes beyond hardline fans saying, we no longer recognise our club.
Yes, yes. To the specifics of this evening then, so for PSG up front, it will be Mbappe, it will have Messi, it won't have Neymar, of course. He is on the bench. Angel Di Maria makes up still a pretty tasty front three. On Neymar, so it's an ankle injury and he's not fully fit, and this is a reoccurring theme when it comes to Champions League knockout stages. Now, the caveat here is this ankle injury happened courtesy of a tackle, and he landed and he goes over on his ankle, and that can happen to the most dedicated professional imaginable. It's one of those incidents, and yet there's still something in me, and it was copper fastened watching the recent documentary, which Neymar is very much behind, the Amazon one. It copper fastened my sense, this guy's not a good professional. And actually, COVID was one of the few times he knuckled down and trained hard, and look at the season he had subsequently for PSG. And I just think it's another key Champions League match and he's not fit. Again, it was a tackle, it was bad. I'm just, whatever this guy is selling, I'm not buying. I really think he has squandered his talent.
Let me be Peter Pedantic, because I just don't go with your phraseology. Your theme, I agree with. You say he's squandered his talent. Well, he's won a treble. Now, not many clubs win a treble. Not many players win a treble. Neymar has. And the part he played in that, particularly in the second half of the season at Barcelona, when it began for the first time to be Neymar, Messi and Suarez, was extraordinary.
Can I jump in there so briefly, and it will be brief. 100%. And he was phenomenal for a season or two for Barcelona. That was at an age where your body protects you from your failings as a professional.
But I'm separating out your two phrases.
Yeah.
You said he squandered his talent and you said he's not a good professional. Mm. So I'm talking about squandering his talent. That's too strong. If you look at what he's done, he hasn't squandered it. He hasn't maximised it. Therefore, I'm saying Peter Pedantic. You also said he's not a good professional. I dispute that. I think he's not an elite professional. And what we're both talking about, I think, is the fact that he undoubtedly is targeted. He got, you know, nicked out of a World Cup where potentially he could have been a decisive player because, was it Murillo, I think, who Kung Fu kicked him so badly. I think it was Murillo that, you know, there was a genuine danger of spinal injury. So, and that's, okay, that's a polemic example, but he is kicked. He's kicked a lot to people either. So you take the flair player out, or players who think he's showing off, and they go to do him. So that I'd be defensive of. He needs protection for sure. And I think what you and I are both agreeing on is that the speed, we've been taught that elite professionals who consistently look after themselves, he does drink too much. I'm not going to say that point from stop. He does drink too much. He does have a party attitude. And therefore, we're talking about recuperation time. So I think we're splitting hairs. I think that I do not agree that he squandered his talent. I think that if you look at his talent, and more so with each passing six-month period, now not each passing season, you could have done more, Neymar. It's just a fact. If at the end of the season, he's starring in St. Petersburg's final and he's taking PSG to the first ever lift of the Cup of the Big Ears, you won't review what you've been trying to say there, but the stat sheet will argue a little bit harder with you about what he's achieved. Has he achieved as much as he should have done? No. Is he an elite professional? No. I just want to be cautious about what we say about somebody who's been, at times in his career, he's been brilliant and he has been to the peak of his potential. Has he done it often enough? No, no, no.
Like, I take your point on the squandering language for sure. And, you know, it's important to be specific when you're talking in these terms. It's just for me, you know, he was carried on a wave of youth and that brilliant Barcelona team. And so, as good as he was, for me, and it's a ridiculous thing to say, treble is a minimum return and it's not far above squandering, really.
He thought he was Peter Pan. He thought he would never get old. It's true. He's been right through it. And he's had a father who's hovered around him saying, son, you're right, you'll never... Let's go out. Let's do this, son. Now, maybe come 30, which he's turning, you should be able to make your own decision. But the pattern was set long ago. Self-indulgent. Yeah, I agree. He's the... where was it that Roy walked out in Ireland team, that famous place in...
Graham, I mean, if you're being Peter Pedantic over me using the word squandered, for you to have just used the phrase on Irish radio, Roy walked out, we have a other ball game.
No, he walked out because people lied about him to his face. They set him up in the meeting.
He was sent home. And he would argue he was, some would say he was sent home.
Once McCarthy said, accused him of faking injuries, And Roy went, the sad thing about me, if you talk about achieving potential, Roy Keane forgave Mick McCarthy long before I did.
Yeah, well, what happened there, I think, is Mick accused, Roy responded, as you can imagine, in a lengthy and very passionate, I think, powerful response. And I think at that point, officially sent home. Maybe he was going anywhere. I don't know. Look, your Twitter mentions for the evening will explain all, don't worry.
Look, all I said is Roy Keane that day was saying, this isn't good enough. These facilities won't do it. What you're saying will do for you lot, but not for me. You can apply your logic and his logic to Neymar and we'll know what he'd say.
Yes. I am kind of joking as well about the Saipan thing. I think we're almost over it as a people. Like, we can allow a...
You liar. You liar.
So that's PSG in a really interesting place for all of those reasons.
Top of the table, that's exciting. Bottom of the table, that's exciting. Like, that's the sort of football that you want to be in. These are the pressure games that in 15, 20 years' time I will look back on and I will remember these are the important matches for me, not middle table teams.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Give us more on Real Madrid then, who you'd be watching week in, week out.
I'm not going to sell you gloom and doom, but I'm a little bit concerned about them. In November, they did something absolutely extraordinary. They beat Real Sociedad, Atletico, Barcelona, Atletico and Inter Milan. And they did so irrespective of what hurdles were put in front of them. Those were consecutive matches. It was a racha, as they call it in Spain, a run. It was powerful. It was Pavlovian. They raised their game in the various different ways in a series of, I think that was six games in 16 days, something like that. It's extraordinary. Now, they don't have that fifth gear, partly because Benzema's been out injured. Ancelotti last week, having said he'll be back for the Villarreal game, had him doing not hill sprints, but sprints up an incline too soon, desperate to have Benzema back. And that cost him his place against Villarreal because the hamstring said no. He couldn't play the 2-0. No, the lead at the top of the league was cut again to 4 points. The league should be tucked away. It isn't. The remaining game against Seville is in Seville. The point gap is 4 at the moment. It's still, I think, a 60-40 bet that Real Madrid win the title. But Florentino Perez will be doing that squeaky bum time that Alex Ferguson liked to talk about. And therefore, when you come to the European Cup, there's absolutely no room for manoeuvre. For Carlo Ancelotti, for Real Madrid. It's PSG, Real Madrid. You should be able to say it. And Ancelotti's been really clever in recent days, repeating the phrase, yes, this could be a final, this could be a final. Not thinking he's going to go out, but setting the scene for it. If they go out in March, because that's when the beginning of March is the second tie in Bernabeu, if they go out, that will be held against them hugely. What's more, the days after Real Madrid beat Liverpool in the final, in Kiev that was, when Zidane walked out, Real Madrid didn't know what to do. And they went and looked at Pochettino when he was at Spurs. And in the May, he had just renewed his contract at Spurs and left no buyout clause whatsoever. He had to be in a society wedding in Madrid that summer with Florentino Perez and Jose Ancho Sanchez. And they said, is it really true you don't have a buyout clause? And Poch said, you're right, I don't. And they said, well, you're an idiot, because otherwise you'd be the Real Madrid manager right now. So Ancelotti is facing somebody after whom Real Madrid have lost it and would lost again if, say, PSG knocked Madrid out. And even if Madrid make a ham fist of winning the title, there's threat to Ancelotti. The bigger thing is tonight, never mind the Austrian regime against the newcomers that they hate, never mind the fact that two presidents split over the European Super League and Calafi assumed power in Europe and Florentino's out there with one other helper, two other helpers saying the Super League is still on. No, the big thing is the football, because the repercussions and the hypothesis will come and will be finalised in the first week of March. Tonight, everybody's asking, is this the night where Mbappe and Messi really fire together? Neymar comes on for a 20-minute spell and they rip Madrid to pieces. Everybody's saying, is Benzema fit? Can he carry threat to a side he's been playing since 2006 and has only lost to twice out of 12, I think? Look, long and short, we've got brilliant entertainment coming tonight. It's just true that there are riders, there's theatre, what the Spanish call morbo. There's more sauce on the game than simply what happens on the pitch.
Full of very familiar names, this Real Madrid 11. So Courtois and goal, Carvajal right back. We have Militao and David Alaba, and Mendy is the back four. Modric still going. Casemiro's there. Toni Kroos is there. You mentioned Benzema and his fitness concerns. Either side of him, we have Asensio and Vinicius, who you're obviously a huge fan of. Who's cooking in that first 11? Who are we looking out for? Who are we worried about?
Courtois, need to mention him. Even if you loved them with Atleti when they won the title and they went to the European final and lost in added time, even if you were a Chelsea fan who thought he was superb, I think this season has been his best ever football. He's the team leader. He didn't just inherit that from Ramos. He kind of wrested it away from Ramos in the last year, 16 months of Sergio Ramos's time at Real Madrid. And Courtois isn't simply the best goalkeeper in the world. Yes, Manchester City. Yes, Liverpool, I hear your shouts. Courtois is, by a country mile, the best keeper. Best sweeper keeper with his feet? No. But this season, not only the best keeper, Courtois' form is such that, Joe, he would rank in the top four or five players in the world. Players, not
nice.
Keepers.
Nice.
So he's there for sure. Militao has grown up hugely. He's a very different player from the one that fluffed so badly at Manchester City and going out of the Champions League there. Benzema until now has been, simply unbelievable. He and Vinicius, I think, have accounted between goals and assists for 58, 59 of the number of times Real Madrid have hit the net this season alone. It's a partnership from a guy a year ago saying about Vinicius when Benzema was coming onto the pitch against Borussia Mönchengladbach was saying to Mondi, don't pass to that guy, Vinicius, the teammate. He's playing for the other side. From that day onwards, unbelievably, from poisoned earth, has grown a beautiful rose, because the two of them understand each other, work together brilliantly. It's now instinctive. Vinicius has learned really, really quickly. The midfield is as it ever was. Packed full of IQ. You know, they could win an episode of University Challenge, but they probably couldn't win Olympic medals.
Yes.
You know, none of them are quick, but their brains are phenomenal instruments. So can Paris Saint-Germain run past them? Don't know. You mentioned Di Maria. Last time these two sides met at Parc des Princes, it was Di Maria who got a couple of goals. Has his athleticism dimmed a little bit? I think he has. And what everybody's going to say, everybody's going to say, Messi's been so this season. Goal contributions, yeah, but has he really been Messi? No, but it's Pavlovin, again, to use that phrase. It's Real Madrid. It's Los Blancos. Is he so great that he just wakes up tonight and turns the tie? Maybe.
Man, that's going to be interesting. You've set that up beautifully. And to finish, there's a text in from Kev. He says, now we're talking, boys. Neymar squandered his talent. Roy walked out in Ireland. More home truths, please. Good man, Kev.
Get a bumper on. Kev, tell Joe to get a bumper on every week. There's your answer.
You're always welcome. Enjoy the game. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
You too.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.